From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney. You know how we joke about how I need constant supervision?
Yes.
You're seeing evidence of that right now.
Yes. Where your
Dr. Woodward is seeing evidence in the studio of my need for constant supervision. So
that's right. Well, let's get to our guest, Dr. Kelly Woodward. He is the medical director at the LiveWell Center at the Park City Hospital. And we're pleased he's been on the show a number of times. We're pleased to welcome him back today. We're going to put him on the hot seat a little bit today, but we're going to, because he's so well-versed in many varied areas of health and fitness and nutrition, like we talk about all the time on The Mountain Life. But today we're going to kick off by talking about brain health and brain fitness, which is a bit of a new term to me. So, Dr. Kelly Woodward, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you. Good morning. Great to be here. And if I could, I just wanted to I'll give a shout out to Tim and a thanks for all the great conversations about health we've had over the years. And I especially appreciate that you've always made sure that our conversations are relevant and enjoyable for our audience. It's really been tremendous. Thank you. Yes, and I do want to get right to brain health and brain fitness. I see all the time patients and family and friends, and of course even in myself, this growing appreciation for how vitally important maintaining the best function of our brains is for a long, productive, happy life. And it's an incredibly exciting time in this regard, because we're really on the verge of a whole new level of understanding about how the brain works, which is leading us to whole new discoveries and what will likely be new ways to prevent brain disease, to maintain a fit and healthy brain for a very long life, and then to also, you know, treat brain disease when brain disease and injury occurs. So it's an incredibly exciting time. It's a very dynamic area, and we can talk about some of the things we know so far.
Great. Well, you know, to start off with, Dr. Woodward, since The Mountain Life has been on the air on KPCW, which has been about 8.5 years, it started off when we would talk to various experts on brain health. It seemed like we started off hearing about these new discoveries, how malleable the brain is, the plasticity of the brain, how it can regenerate after injury. And it's interesting to see the evolution of the research since then into this point now that you're bringing up, you know, this new, relatively new term, brain fitness, and the tie-in to Alzheimer's, for example. It seems as though we can stave off Alzheimer's by performing a variety of tasks, whether it's keeping our brains healthy through exercise, through diet. And that's a little bit what we're going to talk about today. I mean, where are we in what we know about the brain? You know, are we 30% there?
So I would say we're not 30% there. Unfortunately, we're even a little shy of that. But we're learning, for example, yes, the issue of plasticity and the brain's ability to regenerate some of the nerve cells or some of the supporting cells. But what we're now starting to learn is it kind of varies across a lifespan, and it varies in different parts of the brain and different functions. So we're now getting down to learning some of the finer details about which parts of the brain are more malleable as we get older, which parts can recover. But again, kind of more to the point about maintaining brain fitness, it kind of goes all the way back to some of the basics we've talked about repeatedly. It is the basics of, you know, good exercise, good nutrition, very good sleep, managing stress, and continuing to use your brain in a constructive way. And then I guess my final thing is taking all measures to avoid damaging your brain. So
you just said a minute ago, you know, it's kind of too bad that we're not even 30% into knowing what there is to know about the brain and how the brain functions. But I would think that from the standpoint of a practitioner, that might be a constraint that, you know, becomes an issue for you and a frustration for you as a practitioner. But I would think that kind of having done like Lynn was saying, 6 years ago, we were talking about new technology that allowed us to look at the brain in ways that we've never been able to look at it before. And then all that we've learned, which gets us just to that 30% or below threshold of knowledge. Wow, there's still 70% to learn about? That is really exciting. I mean, I know it doesn't help people with Alzheimer's today, but it does open an incredible window of opportunity for the future.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I'm glad you said that. It really is more of a story of optimism going forward, because what's in all that potential is that we're going to have knowledge and tools and solutions that we never had before. That's going to turn the equation on some of these diseases, particularly the diseases of aging, age-related diseases of the brain, as well as injury treatment and that sort of thing.
And this is outside the wheelhouse of a practitioner, but I'm wondering if you find yourself thinking about these issues right now. Silicon Valley billionaires are looking at how to preserve their consciousness, and that's related to the brain. And if they can transfer their consciousness to a cyborg body, then they attain immortality. So there's this big, you know, push and investigation and inquiry into consciousness. And some people are raising the alarm and saying, why would we want to do that? And some people with lots of money are saying, well, I want to do that. I'm not saying it's good for everybody, but it's something I want to do. You have any thoughts on how that connects into, you know, you being a practitioner and talking about these practices of wellness?
I do. And I appreciate that people have that vision and that stretch up to those plausibilities. I would say, you know, as a practitioner, though, what I come down to is kind of the more practical, and that is, well, what can people do today? Because time is ticking on, and you can't put too much on what's way out in the future and ignore what you need to do today, because time is fleeting, and we all need to be attending today with the very common, simple things we know about. So again, I mean, I have to emphasize, you know, getting very good, effective sleep, 7.5 to 8 hours a night across all adult ages, good exercise for your body. Across all research, exercise, we don't even understand why, but exercise is so fundamental to so many processes related to good health. And it's the recent looking at the whole issue of healthy aging. Exercise is fundamental. And then, of course, the whole very complex issue of healthy nutrition and diet. So what we're learning is people have to eat a very healthy diet, very high in whole plants and whole grains. And then the other thing is to, you know, so these are things you can do today while we're moving toward these future states, but not damaging your brain.
There's no guarantee, though. I mean, I look through your list here of all the things I can do well, and I think, you know, I hit a lot of those. I can check a lot of those boxes to a level of satisfaction for me. And I, you know, we could talk about, you know, where I am on a scale of whatever, 1 to 10. But I'm pretty high in most of those, I think. But that doesn't guarantee anything for me. Because there are, as you said, individual circumstances and things that happen with people. So even taking all these steps, it should help, but it's not guaranteed it's going to help.
Yeah, we're well known in my business for not publishing very many guarantees. I will say that you want to create your what I would call your best chance. And that is, you have to do the things you can do. And then, yes, there are some perils out there that even when you do everything right, things can happen. Diseases come along, injuries come along. But that doesn't at all take away from the need for you to sort of get yourself the best chance for the best long, productive, happy life. And part of that is maintaining brain health as well as the rest of the body health that comes along with actually those very same activities.
We're speaking with Dr. Kelly Woodward, the medical director at the LiveWell Center at Park City Hospital. Dr. Woodward, you talked a minute ago about, you know, why we just don't know that why it is that exercise is so effective in creating brain health, brain fitness. And it makes me think about, because we're being very reflective on the mountain life today, about all the conversations we've had over the years of this show. And, you know, there have been for a while, it was, you know, the best kind of exercise is endurance. Then there was this burst, a trend where you just have to do quick burst intervals, you know, of exercise, and that's most efficient, most effective. Is there a certain type of exercise that they're finding is more effective to create brain health?
Well, that's a complex issue.
She wants you to say bicycle riding. That's so, what she's looking. Either that or Nordic skiing.
Yeah. Well, those are great exercises for sure, and it's actually a little bit of a combination of all of the above. So we do know that aerobic conditioning very important for vascular health, right? So how our arteries and our respond and how they are remain flexible and pliable, and it controls our blood pressure, which is very big part of brain health. Those small little arteries that feed our brain, it turns out they're key to brain health. But also strength training, very important. We need to maintain muscle mass for the whole metabolic effect it has on how our body uses energy, including our brain, which uses more energy per gram than any other tissue in the body. So that type of exercise, but then also the exercises that basically challenge your nervous system. So balance and flexibility that cause us to have to, kind of exercise the signals to our brain that help our muscles and our joints and everything work effectively. So it is a bit of a combination. And then the rest of it is quite interesting is there's exercise, but what I really I'm really wanting to refer to is physical activity. Mm-hmm. And that is the rest of the day when you're not in a structured exercise program. Extremely important for all aspects of health, including brain health, to be moving about, doing the things of daily life that involve bending and standing and walking and picking things up and moving about and using our balance. That's the rest of the day, what we refer to as a very high volume, low intensity compared to exercise, which might be more high intensity, lower volume, meaning time. That is as important as the exercise part. So it's this physical activity across all aspects of health. And some of it's related to inflammation. Some of it's related to energy utilization. And again, some of it's related to the plasticity of arteries and veins, as well as just the challenge of doing things that require our brain to be involved in activity.
Did either of you by chance attend the Punch Brothers concert last night at the Eccles Center?
Oh, I did not, no.
Did you? No. Okay. Chris Thiele, the mandolin virtuoso, when you were talking about maintaining activity throughout the rest of the day, it took me right to him and my thoughts as I was watching him last night. This guy can't stand still. And it's not just because of music, which, of course, he's performing this incredible artistic music on his mandolin. But he's the kind of guy who's always moving. And I thought, he must be so healthy. I'm sure he can't sit in a seat like we're all doing now. But it's a good, as I was watching him, I thought, I'm going to be more like him tomorrow as I go through my day. I'm going to move around. I'm going to dance.
You've made a few of those proclamations through the years. You were going to do squats, and I think there were planks at one time also, right? In the studio, in between questions.
I do a lot of squats. Not so much plank. It's hard to talk and do plank at the same time.
Uh-huh.
Well, I will say that the last time I visited Dr. Kelly Woodward professionally, he did say, well, Lynn, it's great that you do all this Nordic ski racing, and it was in the wintertime, and he said, but you have to go lift weights. You have to do strength training. I said, Dr. Woodward, you don't understand. Nordic skiing's the hardest sport ever, and I race, and my heart, my heart's pounding. My heart rate's through the roof. I must be so fit. Lynn, you must do strength training. So much for me knowing more than the doctor. You have an event coming up at the Park City Hospital in the Live Well Center on August 15th. It's a Thursday from 6 to 7:30 p.m. on this topic, what's new in brain health and Alzheimer's disease. You're not presenting, but a visiting doctor is Dr. Sabah. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, this is a tremendous opportunity to have Dr. Marwan Sabah. He is the director of Cleveland Clinic's Brain Health Center. He is a national and international expert on brain health and Alzheimer's disease, and particularly age-related brain disease. We've asked him to talk about exactly those issues of what is the latest on preventive brain health and brain fitness, and then what are we learning about Alzheimer's disease, which, you know, is a very big problem across our country. So it's really a great opportunity for our community. This is a free community speaker event at the Blair Education Center at Park City Hospital, as you said, August 15th, and open to the public. We welcome everyone to come and hear Dr. Sabah. He's a published author on this issue, several books and numerous research articles, and again, heads up a very renowned brain research center at Cleveland Clinic.
There's a message about brain health and substance use and the effects on brain with adolescents or, you know, anybody prior to age 24, when I guess the brain becomes more hardwired and less plastic. And I'm familiar with some of that through the journey of my son, who was exposed to it through a neurologist at Duke University who came and spoke to his school and the class of kids, and it had a tremendous impact. And I was just amazed that there are kids, when they hear the data and they get a presentation from a credible authority, that it can change their behaviors in a positive way. And in this instance, I mean simply non-use of any substances that can, alcohol or anything else, that can impact and change and actually affect the wiring of your brain prior to age 24. Is that something that you're addressing through the event, or is that kind of a side initiative that is more handled through our Wellness Alliance and kind of behavioral health at the county?
Yeah, well, I think that is, Tim, is exactly the broader message about, and why I always want to include about, you know, we shouldn't do things that, you know, overtly and directly damage our brains, as well as, you know, trying to do everything we can to set the environment best for our brains. We shouldn't introduce things that are known to be harmful. We'll touch on it. It won't be the main focus of that particular lecture, but it is absolutely a component of brain health. We don't know yet sometimes what are some of the long-term effects in some of these, you know, different substances and things that people might be exposed to. We know in general that they, you know, a lot of things are toxic to the brain, toxic to nerve cells, and where that damage gets started, you know, we don't have all of the knowledge we will have in the future, but the general tone is exactly that, and that is, don't, you know, alcohol reaches a level where it is toxic to the brain. Other substances, particularly those, you know, from inhaling smoke from any substance, you know, goes into the brain, and those things are more likely to cause damage than they are to certainly cause any good.
Well, you have the best chance argument that resonates well with people who are aging and creating those things that you can do well to create the best chance for you. And then you have a best chance argument to the younger end of the spectrum also. It probably has to be framed a little differently and presented differently, and maybe different presenters to have credibility and legitimacy with that end of the spectrum. But it's just as important a conversation. And sometimes I don't think it gets the same focus and energy that the aging because of Alzheimer's, and, you know, we're all getting closer to the end and further away from the beginning. But boy, that beginning conversation is really impactful and powerful when it takes root.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think we probably have a bit of conversation and more conversation with youth, a lot of conversation, I should say, with youth about, sort of in the context of like concussion, where we don't want the message to be that, oh, it's okay at any age, you know, you'll have a rest of your life to recover from that. That isn't actually how it works for many of these things. We know that, like, repetitive brain injury from concussion, that of repetitive brain trauma has an additive effect that we can't guarantee. We can't assure that people will recover completely from that and that they won't have some lasting damage. And of course, you know, the new research showing that certainly at a certain level of repetitive head injury, people have very distinct, devastating chronic brain damage. So so there's sort of no pass on giving yourself the best chance, be it based on age.
And not only damage, but declining brain health, even if you never get another brain injury after that. You see that a lot with that chronic traumatic encephalopathy. There we go.
Perfect.
Thank you. You also have at the LiveWell Center and at the Park City Hospital some other things coming up. There's a brain fitness lecture in October. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so the brain fitness series is actually a series of forums over a multi-week period where people can sign up and register and participate in a little smaller discussions with experts along the course of a weekly series talking about these various aspects of brain health. And so it's going to be experts talking about nutrition and its impact on brain health, exercise and how it relates to brain health, sleep and how, and then social activity. And of course, we haven't talked enough about socialization and and convening and getting together and sharing. That's a very human, very deeply human characteristic that turns out big part of our brain health is this human characteristic of being together and sharing with each other that is very important for brain health. So the Brain Fitness Program will have experts talking over a series of weekly presentations at the that'll happen again at the Park City Hospital over a several week period.
So this program will be available to adults of any age who have good cognitive function and want to keep it that way. It's not necessarily a lecture series that is for the AARP group among us.
Well, yes, well, it's not targeting any specific age. It's actually, it is in the context of brain fitness. It occurs across the lifespan. It is a task or a part of wellness that people need to attend to throughout their lives. So this the target audience for this is adults of all ages. Certainly, we do find, I guess, people as we get older tend to start to recognize this and seem to have a pretty healthy appetite for all things about brain health, and I appreciate that. And so we certainly welcome those folks as well. So that program will be starting in October.
Okay. And how does one register?
So the easiest way to see more information about these programs and to register is to go to our website at livewellcenter.org/parkcity. And you can see all these programs under events, and you can register for the Brain Fitness Program, and you can register for the speaker event on the 15th, though people don't have to register to come to that, but we like to get some registration so we have an idea of, how to set up the room for the presentation. Again, you want to go there, and you can see all these activities and many, many more, and find out all the contact information if we can help you more directly.
For those of our listeners who may not have heard of the LiveWell Center yet, can you give us an overview of what you do there?
Yeah, so the LiveWell Center is a center located in the Park City Hospital. It is Intermountain's healthcare's initiative to really focus on the things people can do, we can all do to give ourselves the best chance for good health, the things that we have to do ourselves, the lifestyle things, the how to get effective exercise, control your body composition and body fat, get good sleep, get good nutrition, manage stress. And we have services there that range all the way from these programs targeting a larger audience like educational things to individualized services for people who need very specific help implementing an exercise program or adjusting their diet or getting an assessment of where they are in their health so that they know where to prioritize their next activities. So it's open to all people. We welcome referrals from people's healthcare providers, but you can also directly access all of these services by calling our center. And again, all the contact information is at our website, livewellcenter.org/PC.
Well, one of the unintended wonderful outcomes of what you do at the Live Well Center, Dr. Woodward, is that you created a platform for Lynn and I to compete with one another on a heart scan that you recommended each of us. I mean, I think you recommended I get one. I can't say that you recommended Lynn get one. She might have just gotten one because she knew I was getting one, which she does a lot of. And so I got my results back, and I think Lynn got her results back. And
Tell us
about the heart scan.
Yeah.
What is it and what are we trying to do? Mine was, I think you recommended mine because I had a marker in my cholesterol level that said that this would be a good baseline of knowledge to create.
Yeah, so yeah, this gets to a little bit to health, heart disease, heart health, and vascular disease, all of our arteries. And we're referring to, you know, the likelihood or the chance of developing hardening of the arteries that leads to heart attack, stroke, and other diseases. And we know cholesterol and watching particularly the LDL, bad cholesterol, is a marker that can tell somewhat your risk for developing heart disease. But we now have tests like this. What this particular scan you're referring to, CT coronary calcium test, looks more specifically at you to see, have you begun to show signs that you're developing buildup of your arteries and on your arteries? And we use that to further define your risk of heart disease, particularly heart attack. But it also relates to if you do have that vessel disease in those small vessels, it's likely in other parts of your body too. So important to address it very summarily if you have evidence of hardening of the arteries. And then we do know that there are people who don't develop that in spite of, you know, even, you know, mild elevations of their cholesterol. And this is a way to more specifically determine your risk and recommend what you should be doing about it, whether you should have the most aggressive therapies to block it or whether, you know, the lifestyle things we're imploring here are sufficient. And that helps us to know where you are. If you have, like, so for example, if you're one of these people lucky enough to have no calcium, in other words, we see no calcium in the arteries, doesn't mean you don't have very early disease, but it means your likelihood of having a problem from it over the next 5 to 10 years is pretty small.
Is there an age where you will always see some calcium? I mean, is it inevitable that there will be calcium at some point?
It is not, actually.
Okay.
Now, and unfortunately, in our current culture where we have a lot of diabetes, which really promotes this process of hardening of the arteries, in our culture, it's pretty prevalent at some age. Most people have calcium. There are societies in some primitive tribes that have been studied in the world that don't have quite our diet and our activity habits that are sometimes not so good for health. There are cultures in the world where they have very, very low rates of calcium. There are cultures where less than 30% of people ever in a lifetime get that degree of heart disease. So it's possible to live a long life without it. But if it's there, it can be addressed. And that's the good news. It's actionable information. Things can be done to help the situation.
So, Dr. Woodward, before we let you go, you're going to have to tell us, and I know you're just squirming in your chair as we violate our own privacy by talking about our health on air. But let's just say that Tim
hypothetically
that Tim had no calcium buildup, and let's just say that I had no calcium buildup.
And just for further analysis, let's say hypothetically Tim was 61 and Lynn was a lot younger.
Okay. Who is healthier? Okay, so you have to figure into the 2,446 green smoothies.
2,550.
And I've had about,
yeah,
I've had about 50% of that.
You think?
I am a woman. He is a man. He's older. I'm younger. We have a similar activity level. What are our chances?
Who's healthier? I'm much taller.
He's an inch taller.
Well, from what you've told me, I have to say you're actually both very healthy. And you're healthy because you're applying yourselves.
You're evading the question,
yeah,
Dr. Woodward.
Yeah.
We know we're both healthy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We need to know who's healthier.
Healthier is an imperfect sort of
Well, here's a suggestion. Since I will continue hosting this show and reading all these books we get, and Tim will just be laying on his couch watching
That's
sports,
right.
my brain fitness is going to be better.
No doubt.
So if I might say, coming back to brain fitness, you're kind of alluding to a point that I really didn't emphasize. People, as we go through our lives and as we get older, we really need to maintain a growth mindset in terms of how we view our health and how we view our world for brain health. And what that refers to is this involved, active, curious mind.
Yes.
That is plastic in our thought processes and what we're interested in, and not stagnant as a place to be in aging, right? In other words, we can't get to a point where we go, this is how I view the world. The world should not change. We have to embrace and grow and train our minds and exercise a growth mindset where we contribute to the changes in our world, as well as appreciate them, understand them, grow with them. And that's a growth mindset.
Yes.
And that is actually been shown to be fundamental for a long, healthy life.
Right. Well put. And a very sensitive and delicate handling of comparing Tim's health to mine. Dr. Kelly Woodward, thank you so much for joining us. Again, that lecture is August 15th and not to be missed. And I wanted to say that every time we have you on, because I know you're a sleep expert, I want to ask you about sleep, and we've run out of time. So we'll have you back on, and we'll just talk about sleep, because...
Well, that's a good topic for me to talk about. So that's too bad that I won't be on the show anymore, because I'm an expert on sleep.
Yeah, napping in particular.
I'm glad. I hope more people are becoming expert in what it feels like to experience good sleep.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming in today. Great to see you. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.